Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you from the OU Israel Center in Jerusalem. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. This is kind of a strange period of time here in Israel. It is post-Tisha B'Av. The Nechama is supposed to be taking hold. We are at Thursday, Yom Chamishi, of Shabbat Parshat Vo'etchanan, Shabbat Nachamu, the Shabbat of Comfort, which is also Tu B'Av, today being Yud Gimel Menachem Av, the 13th of the month of Av, Shabbat being Tu B'Av. I'll try to mention something about that also. So we are with our backs towards the tragic commemoration that was Shivasar B'Tammuz, the 3 weeks, the 9 days, Tisha B'Av, and we're supposed to be facing forward towards the Geula. Yet, as soon as Tisha B'Av was over, the disengagement took strong hold, and people have been glued to their TVs and radios, and actually being there, following the action. It is not a pretty picture, and a very sad, mournful, lamentable time. I'm going to spend a little time on that and hopefully be able to break away and not dwell too much on what's going on. Personally, I decided not to shave after Tisha B'Av, in other words, after Chatzot on Monday. Maybe I'll shave this Friday, Lechvod Shabbat. I haven't decided yet, but it's that kind of feeling here. It's like prolonged Tisha B'Av brought up to date with the tragic events of the disengagement. And maybe something that makes it even sadder is that there are people in Israel who don't see it as a sad thing, who said goodbye and good riddance to an albatross around our neck. And that's part of the tragedy as well. I'll try to talk more about it later in a rational way, but it will be hard not to get emotional, and I really don't think that's bad. It deserves to be emotional. Let's begin, as we usually do, with Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihiyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod. Ki imacha haslicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kivata nafshi v'lidvoro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Let's also do Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, which is the one of the 15 Shir Hama'alot. That's not really Hama'alot, but rather Shir Lama'alot. The famous one of I will lift my eyes to the hills, asking from where will come my salvation. Shir lama alot esa einai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha al yanum shomrecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yeminecha, yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorecha mikol ra, yishmor et nafshecha, Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara v'ashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha, ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. Here's what I'd like to do. I want to play a song which I've played before on Torah Tidbits Audio, kind of often as far as my songs go. This is a song by Ira Heller. The words are from this week's Parsha, making them extra special because not only do we read them this Shabbat, but we read them Sunday morning in the Tisha B'Av reading as well. The words, Ata Horeita Lada'at, you, the people of Israel, have been shown in order that you shall know, horeta la da'at, for the purpose of knowing, ki Hashem hu ha'elokim, you have been shown that God is God, that Hashem is God. Ein od milvado, there is no other like him. After the song, maybe we'll start with a discussion of belief / knowledge of God, and something that I wrote this week in Torah Tidbits about the dynamic mitzvah to believe in God and how it applies on a day-to-day basis. And maybe that will keep us in the funk of the disengagement period, but bring us out a little in a way of looking at things. In the meantime, Ira Heller, Ata Horeta Ladat.
Yeah.
Ira Heller with Ata Hareta Lada'at. I find that a very soothing song. It's one of my all-time favorites. And not in general, but specifically the way Ira does it. And it lends itself to the emotion that I'm talking about. Because belief in God is not just a brain thing, an academic thing. It's definitely something with entire range of emotions. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to the people. It's in the context of warning about veering away from belief in God. And sort of like a summary, among many other summaries we have in the Torah. Bottom line, you have to believe in God. Now the command to believe in God comes from the words Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mibeit Avadim, the famous first commandment, I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. This is a verse that appears in Shmot 20, Parshat Yitro, where the Aseret HaDibrot are first presented to us, and it is a verse that is repeated intact here in Parshat Vo'etchanan, when Moshe Rabbeinu is recounting to the people, the new generation, who will soon be crossing the Jordan into Eretz Yisrael, and one of the things that he reviews with them is the Sinai experience and the expression of the Aseret HaDibrot. There are changes, maybe we'll get to some of them, maybe we won't, but I want to focus on commandment number one, the commandment to believe in God. It is one of the relatively few mitzvot in the Torah that does not come to us in the form of, and God said to Moshe, saying, command the people of Israel and tell them X, Y, Z. It doesn't sound like a command when the Torah says, Bo'erev tochlu matzot, in the evening of the 15th of Nisan, you shall eat matzah. Basukot teshvu shivat yamim, you shall dwell in a sukkah for 7 days. V'achalta v'savata uveirachta Hashem Elokecha. If you eat and you have a satisfying meal, you shall say Birkat HaMazon afterwards. All of these things, as well as the standard form of a prohibition, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not be a gossip, thou shalt not wear shatnez, whatever, sound like a command. Occasionally we come across a mitzvah which doesn't sound like a command. I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Statement. It follows, Lo yihyeh lecha Elohim achirim al ponai. That's what follows it. Meaning, there shall not be any other gods before me. That's a prohibition. That too is counted from Yitro, even though it exists here in Vo'etchanan as well. And therefore I don't feel bad about speaking about it in the context of this week's Torah reading, because it's in this week's Torah reading. But Rambam, Sefer Chinuch, and others go the step further by saying it is not just an introductory statement to the prohibition of idolatry. It is its own command, thou shalt believe in God. Similarly, also in Vo'etchanan, and not in Yitro, is Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Famous verse, maybe the most famous verse in Judaism. A statement, hear, O Israel, the Lord, our God, Hashem is one, is interpreted or presented to us as the positive commandment, thou shalt believe in the unity of God. It's a phenomenon that exists among mitzvot, some of which are understood from a statement. It is no less of a command. There's a separate issue whether belief in God and belief in His unity are subject to be counted among 613, or are they on some other kind of deeper level of a fundamental, of a foundation stone upon which the structure of 613 mitzvot is built? But let's not get into that now. Let us take as a starting point a mitzvah in the Torah requiring us to believe in God. Now, there's a concept which I remember from maybe chemistry, a distinction between the term static and dynamic. And I want to apply that to mitzvot. Most mitzvot are static. Ba'erev tochlu matzot. You shall eat matzah on the eve of the 15th of Nisan at the Seder table. Every year, you prepare by baking your own matzot, or more commonly, by buying matzot. You set the Seder table. You get ready for the mitzvah. It comes in the course of the order of the Haggadah. You wash for hamotzi, you take your matzot, you take your upper, your middle broken piece, your bottom one, you make hamotzi. You then make the special bracha for the mitzvah of eating matzah. You chew a certain quantity of matzah, you swallow, mitzvah done. Your kavana, the intention and the mind process while you're doing the mitzvah, okay, that varies from time to time, depending on how much you put into it and other circumstances, but the essence of the fulfillment of the mitzvah, reclining to the left, eating of the matzah, is a static mitzvah. You did it last year, you did it this year, in Mir Tzashem you'll do it again next year. And the same thing with more frequent mitzvot, tefillin you put on every day of the week, and mezuzah you affix to your doorpost, and benching you do after a meal, and davening this, and Torah learning that, and these are all mitzvot that have more or less a static definition. Then you come to a mitzvah like, thou shalt believe in God. That's not static at all. Question, do you believe in God? Answer, yes I do, I believe. That's not it. It's much, much more than that, and it changes from day to day and from person to person. Basically, the question is, do you believe in God? If the answer is yes, then you're on your way to the fulfillment of that mitzvah. But it's much more complex than that. For example, if you read something in a book, or if something happens, or you see it on TV or in the newspapers or on radio, whatever, it could be an event that occurs. It could be something in current events on a national scale or a worldwide scale. It could be a personal thing. Let's take a personal example first. A couple has this beautiful baby, and it dies at age 11 months of crib death. Terrible, terrible thing. We shouldn't know from it. It happens. The people, the couple, are devastated. And one of the thoughts that they have is, how could God let this happen? And that leads in their conscious mind, or more likely on a subconscious level, to a weakening or a diminishing of their belief in God. Do they believe in God? Yes, they do. It's not gone. But that question, which can't help but come into their mind, how can this happen, makes it a challenge to re-examine, again, conscious, subconscious, whatever, to re-examine or to re-fulfill, not even a good example, not even a good term, the mitzvah of belief in God. Because now the quality of their belief is changing. What I mean by that is not necessarily it's becoming less, it could be becoming more, or even if it stays the same, it's going to be different. Because they now have a new, unfortunately sad, tragic experience that needs to be brought into the picture of the total picture of the command to believe in God. The command to believe in God and in His unity is a 24/7. 365, etc., etc. It's a constant mitzvah. But it is not active constantly. It's like a computer program that sits running in the background. And on the taskbar at the bottom, you see a little icon that reminds you that that program is active, but at the moment it's in the background while you do other things on the screen. But when something happens, now this could be something, if you want to use the computer model, when you click and bring it up to activate it, or let's say, maybe in a more analogous way, when something happens that the computer is programmed to bring that mitzvah of belief in God back onto the active screen. Something happened. personal tragedy or a personal joyful occasion as well. I shouldn't only put it in the negative. A great thing could happen in a person's life, and that too brings the mitzvah of belief in God to the fore for re-fulfillment. I'll try to describe that in a moment. But that's the process that happens. Hold that thought. We'll expand on it in a moment. We happen to be in the middle of a kind of heavy topic about belief in God, but let's take a musical break, and then we'll get back to the issue at hand. That was Michael Streicher with Ana Avda Dekucha Brichu, I am a servant of God. And that's also part of the fulfillment of the mitzvah to believe in God, where one acknowledges his subservience to God, and that introduces a very important component, I believe, in the process of fulfilling the mitzvah to believe in God. What I mean by that is the process of believing in God includes a recognition, and maybe it's first and foremost, a recognition that I will not be able to understand everything or most of everything that God does. And when I have questions, how could God do that? The first part of the answer is, you don't have to know how God could do that, but this is God's world, and he has a complete picture of it. You have a minuscule portion perspective of the situation, and of course you don't understand why God does what he does. That, I don't know if it could be comforting by itself, unless a person really works on it and gets to the point where it is not only first and foremost in the process, but it's always there. And I believe it is. Almost like using the same computer analogy to a background color, where everything that you read is one thing, but the fact that all the writing has a background of a light orange or a green or a blue or whatever, sitting in the background, that's also part of the picture, but not the part that you necessarily read, but the part that everything is based upon. I don't know if that's making any sense, and I don't know if I should stay too close to this computer program analogy, working in the background, etc., etc. But what I mean now is that not losing sight of the inability of human beings to completely understand what God is doing in this world is an important component of the mitzvah to believe in God, because its absence creates an arrogance, or an arrogance on the person creates its absence, whichever way you want to look at it, that arrogance saying, I am capable with my superior intellect to understand everything that there is to understand, and therefore I will examine the situation, and I'll think about it, and I'll contemplate it, and if I still can't make sense out of it, then it doesn't make sense. Wrong. If you can't make sense out of it, that means you have not been able to ponder sufficiently this perhaps imponderable thing. And I don't know if I'm overdoing this portion of the issue, but I know that when the questions, let's say, of the Shoah come up, the Holocaust, and where was God during the Holocaust, you say, whoa, stop, time out. Remember, first and foremost, that we have no idea, really. In fact, it might be presumptuous to even embark on a process of trying to understand, but I believe that that's important also. Anyway, let's get back on track. So, something happens. Could be a personal thing, could be a national thing, and I'm purposely not dwelling on current events, although that's what motivated this whole discussion, in addition to the fact that the mitzvah to believe in God is in Parshat Vo'etchanan, the reading of Shabbat Nachamu. But the thing that motivated it was a question of how can God listen to the leaders of Hamas, leaders of the Palestinian Authority, the celebrations in Gaza for the Israeli, not disengagement, not withdrawal, but surrender and retreat, the humiliating defeat of Israel and the victory of terror and Islamic culture, that the brave persistence and resistance of the Palestinians did not allow the Israeli occupiers and oppressors to defeat them, and lehefech, the martyrs of the Intifada, the suicide bombers, brought about this defeat of Israel. How can God let that happen without doing something about it? That is the question of the day that pops into certain people's minds, And that's why I am working on this model of the mitzvah to believe in God pops up and confronts you. And now you have an obligation, you, I, each of us, have an obligation, just like to eat matzah at the Seder, just like to say Birkat HaMazon in a meal, we have an obligation to believe in God. Well, what do you mean? I already believe in God. No. You believe in God on a certain level. That level has now been raised because of what's happening and because of how it's affecting you. And you have to re-examine the command to believe in God, bringing into the picture that which yesterday or last week or last year was not in the picture. When I was in a bombing and injured, thank God, only lightly, second-degree burns and other things, but that's what's called lightly, in Machane Yehuda 3 years ago, before I was in the pigua, that experience was not part of my challenge to fulfill the mitzvah to believe in God. When that happened, I had to rethink. Now, some people will rethink and come to a conclusion, unfortunately, where their belief in God has diminished. That's a lack of fulfillment of the mitzvah to believe in God. Some people will have an increase in their belief in God when something happens, good or bad, personal or national or international, a family related or neighbors or friends or whatever. But everybody needs to rethink the whole picture. And if the conclusion is this new experience or this new fact or this new discovery or this new whatever is now part of the fabric of my complex, individualized belief in God, then I have fulfilled the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeiticha Mi'eretz Mitzrayim Mi'Beit Avadim. I don't know if I could say it better than that, and I'm hoping that some of the listeners will catch on to what I'm trying to say. And not that it's an innovation, but it might be putting an idea a certain way that people hadn't thought of it before. You know, there's a side point here. When you have a halachic situation, very often you subject it to a she'ela, a question of a rav, of a rabbi. You call up and you say, can I do this on Shabbat or not? Is this kosher or not? How do I do this? I used a milchik knife to cut onions, and I want to use those cut onions, which I fried by accident in a meat frying pan. Do they have the status of meat? Are they problematic because I had a milchik knife? All right, whatever. Or, here's a mezuzah. Can you look it over? Is it kosher or not? You see these two letters? Does that little tiny thing invalidate it or not? These are the usual kinds of she'elot that a person has. But since I am approaching belief in God as one of the 613 mitzvot, this too is subject to rabbinic question. Rabbi, do you have a couple of minutes to spare me? I would like to meet with you, or I'd like to ask you over the telephone about the mitzvah to believe in God. And you can say to a Rav, if he's the right person to talk to, these are my thoughts, this is what's bothering me, this is what I can't quite incorporate into the whole picture of belief in God, this is what I think is unfair. Can you help me put it into a certain perspective that I can then walk away with the feeling that I have fulfilled yet once again the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and the program gets minimized by clicking on that little minus sign in the box in the upper right-hand corner, or sometimes the upper left-hand corner, and the word minimize is unfortunate in this case, because I don't mean that the mitzvah to believe in God is ever minimized, but in the computer model context, what it is sent into the background to be recalled at the click of a mouse, and brought back when needed to be reworked. I don't know if I could do better than that, and maybe we'll leave it at that and move on. Before we move on, though, I need to tell you a little bit more. One of my daughters posed the question of that I mentioned before, how can God allow this to go by when it is being perceived as a victory for terror, for anti-Jewish, for anti-religious? I mean, there's so many factors in here that it's Chilul Hashem, for him to let it happen. Now, we're not the first people to raise this issue. When the Jews sinned with the golden calf and God wanted to destroy the people, Moshe Rabbeinu argued, Lama Yomeru Mitzrayim Lemor, why should Egypt be able to say, what, God took you out of Egypt to kill you in the wilderness? Can't he do what he wanted and bring you to Eretz Yisrael? Whatever. And God's reaction to that is summarized by the verse, Vayinachem Hashem al hara'a asher diber lasot la'amo. God rescinded and regretted his decision that he had made against his people. So that's good. It worked. What happened a year later when the Meraglim came back and God wanted to punish them, the people, the adult male population, by having them wander for 40 years in the wilderness and die off? Where's the argument of what will Egypt say and what will the nations say, that you were not strong enough? And in that case, God said, this is what I'm doing. The Meraglim themselves were struck dead. The adult male population, with the singular exceptions of Kalev and Yehoshua, were destined to die out and not go into Eretz Yisrael, notwithstanding. So when you have a situation and you wonder how God could do such a thing, sometimes he doesn't, and sometimes he does, and sometimes there are factors beyond our ability to know, but neither side should shake a person's belief in God, and if it does, then you have the active mitzvah of thou shalt believe in God. So had Mordechai encouraged Esther to put on her finery and appear before the king and plead on behalf of her people, what would have happened had the king seen her and said, instead of what the Megillah tells us, had said to her, you dare come to the inner court of the king without being summoned here? You know that there is an across-the-board punishment for that. Guards, off with her head. So she would be executed, and Haman's plot, what, would be hatched, and the Jews of the kingdom would be subject to Haman's ruthlessness. It didn't happen. But what would have happened had it happened would not necessarily change the efforts of Mordechai and Esther. It's nice that we celebrate Purim instead of lamenting some other tragedy, because the hishtadlus, the efforts of a Mordechai and an Esther, paid off the way that we're able to smile about it. But when you see the davening that was held in the communities in Gush Katif, and the davening at the Kotel, and the reciting of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and the reading of Eicha on Tisha B'Av night, and you look at that and you say, ah, there is a Yeshua that's coming because of this powerful kind of prayer. And then what happens instead is something where the Palestinians gloat and Hamas takes credit for Israel's defeat. What about the tefillot? What about the fasting? So you can say, wasn't enough, wasn't strong enough, wasn't as many people. Or you can say, as the famous story, God listens to our prayers, he just says no sometimes. Or there could be something else. You know, I'm not a gamzu latova, this too is for the good kind of person. I believe when bad things happen, then they're bad. And I believe that they could be part of a larger scheme of things, and I shouldn't despair, even though I could be very disappointed in what happened. That's not the same thing. You know, that also is an important concept to keep in mind here. We don't always get what we want, not as individuals and not as a nation. And there are different interests involved here, and there are definitely complex situations which are beyond our grasp, but we still have to do what you have to do. And that's part of this also. So we can be disappointed in what's going on, we could be saddened by what's going on, but we can't despair. Maybe that's the key. Maybe trials and tribulations raise questions in one's mind, and you work on them, but you don't despair. That may be despair, despondency, that comes from bad things that happen. That is a lack in the fulfillment of belief in God, because if belief in God is updated, again using a computer model, updated to accommodate that which happens, good or bad, then that should include the hope for the future, etc., etc. Again, I don't know if this is really getting across. Maybe it's just being a way that I could relieve some of the emotions that I have at this time. But let's use the couple of minutes that remain, and there aren't many, to just go over a couple of other things from Vo'et Hanan. As I mentioned, Vo'et Hanan has the second version of the Aseret HaDibrot. The only mitzvah that is added from that particular context is V'lo Tit'aveh, not to lust after that which other people have. This is in addition to not coveting, and the standard definition is coveting is a thought that leads to an action, and Lo titaveh, velo titaveh is pure thought. You have the thought, it's not a good thought, you're not going to act upon it, you're not going to steal anything, you're not going to hurt anybody, you're not going to even con somebody into giving you something, but the thought itself is a destructive one, and you have to be careful with that. Also in Parshat Vo'et Hanan is the first passage of Kriyat Shema, from Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, to V'ahavta at Hashem Elokecha. Baruch Shem, of course, is a pasuk that's been added to the Kriyat Shema. It's not part of the original text of the Torah. But that first passage of Kriyat Shema, 48 words, a number of verses contain 7 of the 613 mitzvot. They are the one mentioned earlier, the belief in the unity of God, the mitzvah to love God with all one's heart and soul, to learn Torah, Vishinantam Livanecha, to learn and to teach Torah, that's the third, to recite the Shema twice a day, to put tefillin on the arm, to put tefillin on the head, those are counted as separate mitzvot, and to put a mezuzah on one's doorpost. V'dibarta bam, speak these words, is the mitzvah to recite Shema. How often? B'shachbecha uv'kumecha. When one goes to sleep, meaning at night time, and at the time that people arise in the morning, meaning the first part of the morning. So those are mitzvot, and there are a number of mitzvot that follow the Shema in Vo'et Hanan, a total of 12 mitzvot. We don't have the time to go into them all, but one of them will be expanded upon in 2 weeks' time in Parshat Re'eh, and that has to do with nevuah, prophecy, and our obligation to listen to a prophet and not to overly test one. But we'll leave that for when we get up to it in a different context. Quick word about Tu B'Av. The Mishnah says it was a very joyous occasion. There are a lot of minor, well, I can't really call them minor, a lot of little things that combine to create the day of Tu B'Av. There are several facets of Tu B'Av that counter different elements of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was the anniversary of the decree against the generation of the Midbar, the adult male population, from entering the land. Tu B'Av represented the end of that decree. It is told that in the final year of the wandering, the Jews, the males, adult males of the population, as they had done each year previously, would dig a grave and sleep in it on Tisha B'Av night, and those who arose the following morning would journey on for another year. Those who didn't, didn't. On this particular last year, no one died over Tisha B'Av, and they didn't really understand what was happening, since 15,000 on average were scheduled to have died, and it was at the middle of the month of Av that they realized that the decree had been rescinded, and they celebrated. That's Tu B'Av. So it works as the flip side, the other side of the coin, of Tisha B'Av being the anniversary of the decree against that generation. Similarly, the Tisha B'Av, one of the tragedies it commemorates, as mentioned in the Mishnah in Ta'anit, is the destruction of the city of Beitar. An event occurred years later where the remains of those who died in Beitar, who were not allowed to be buried as a Roman punishment to the Jewish people for their revolt or rebellion, were finally given permission to be buried. Chazal, our sages, saw a miraculous feature in the fact that the bodies had not deteriorated over that long period until burial, and took this as a good thing, to the point where a bracha was composed to be added to the three main brachot of Birkat HaMazon, the bracha called Hatov V'Hameitiv, and that was an event that Tu B'Av marks. Again, it has a feature of being the opposite side of the coin to a Tisha B'Av event. And probably we could take a close look at other features of Tu B'Av and see in them the other side, the positive side of the coins that are representative of Tisha B'Av. Let's finish off with wishes for a regular Shabbat Shalom and a special Shabbat Shalom, being the combination of Shabbat Nachamu and Tu B'Av. And we'll finish this edition issue of Torah Tidbits Audio with the song that speaks for this Shabbat. Nachemu, nachemu, ami, yoheimar, Elokeichem. Nachemu, nachemu, ami, yoheimar, Elokeichem. Daberu Alev Yerushalayim Vekiru Eleha Kimola Tzeva Kinerza Ava Sehar
Nachemur, Nachemur, Ami, Yohui Ma, Eloi Keichem. Nachemur, Nachemur, Ami, Yohui Ma, Eloi Keichem. Ui Dabiru, Aleim, Yerushalayim, V'kiru Eileha, Ki Mola Tziva, Ki Nirta Ava, Tu
Sion Schenker.